You're listening to Weird and Dead, the paleontology podcast that tells evolution's most embarrassing and bizarre stories. I'm Amy Atwater.
And I'm Megan Wetherell, and we're two living scientists who are weirdly excited about dead things.
Speaking of excited, did you know that some animals had bones in their dicks?
And correspondingly, in their clitoris.
Yes, this week is all about evolution and the loss and the use of actual bony boners, the baculum and the bobellum.
So of course, given that, you should expect that in this episode we are going to talk about genitalia and other gross things, so please check the warnings in the description. Also, sometimes dick bones are used for non-consensual sexual behavior in animals, which we will briefly discuss in this episode. So to start off with today, we are going to talk about the La Brea tar pits, which are an incredible accumulation of fossils that, for whatever reason, are pretty much directly in the middle of Los Angeles. And they are incredibly large collections. You can get a really great idea of like morphological variation, which as a person who has studied that in the past is like super cool. And it means that you get, because these animals would essentially, the herbivores would get stuck in the sticky asphalt, and then the carnivores would come in afterwards and try to eat the dying slash dead mammoth. And as a result, it's a carnivore trap. So you get, in particular, very large numbers of carnivores, including things like dire wolves, which, if you were not aware, were real. Not just a Game of Thrones thing. The amount of how much bigger they are than modern wolves. It turns out it really depends on which wolf subspecies you compare it to. They were a little bit bigger than today's wolves. They're not like huge, bigger than the biggest of today's wolves, but they were real. And because they were so excited about running into sticky pits of asphalt after dead and decaying mammoths, they have preserved whole skeletons of these animals and just tons and tons and tons of them. So that means even little tiny nitty gritty bones, which are the bones that we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. Little things like, they're called free floating bones. So things like your patella, your kneecap, sesamoid bones, which are the bones that form around your tendons in things like your wrists. These are all things that preserve very poorly in the real world. And if you don't have them in association with the animal, you can't always tell what they are. Right. But very, very well in places like La Brea. And so we're going to talk in particular about one bone, of which there are 400 examples at the La Brea tar pit. 400 examples, 159 of them are complete. So they have no broken bits. Of those 159, 8 of them are pathological. Mm. And usually that means that they may have had some sort of genetic deformity, or they were broken and then rehealed. And it's very often a twisting along the long axis of the bone. So kind of like the bone got sideswiped, knocked over, and then rehealed, or genetically they were born that way. And one in particular is super, super busted. And it didn't just twist over, it full on folded over to the side. And that is the first image, Amy, that you can scroll down and see of this bone. And Amy is already wincing because she knows what this type of bone is, which is called... This is a baculum, which is the bone you find in some animals' penises. Because that is the subject of today's conversation. So this poor direwolf has a broken and rehealed dick bone.
Oh, I cannot wait for us to put this picture out there. I am empathically feeling the pain of people with penises around the world who are going to look at this and just cringe with the utter suffering that is very evident with this broken and rehealed at a weird angle dick bone.
So, there's facula, which are the male version. And then there's bobella, which are the female version. So bacula, bobella for multiples, baculum, bobellum for singular. Singulars? I was doing so great on, on pronouncing words that were singular or multiple, but then I fucked up singular. So what is a baculum?
Oh, thank you for asking, Megan. I've been waiting for that question to be asked me my whole life. Whole life waiting for a moment like this. I was also thinking in my head, like, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. We'll talk about that. So yeah, we're talking about genital bones today. They're a thing. Would you know it if you had one? You might not, actually, surprisingly. Yeah. We're going to say a lot of weird things. I think we're putting the bone in boner today is the plan. So what you already said is 100% true. So baculum specifically is a penis bone. It's found in some placental mammals. It's not in all mammals. And it's not, like you said, it's not connected to the skeletal system anyway, right? It's not like attached to your spinal cord or your hips or anything like that. They just float, just little floats in the dick. Now, they seem to be pretty highly selected for in some cases. Mm-hmm. Like, they are pretty, like, prone to selection as they've appeared and been lost and regained and lost in multiple different lineages through time. But it seems to be pretty direct evidence for some sort of sexual selection going on. Keeps that dick nice and hard. Though in some animals like bats, it seems to also aid in protecting the urethra. So, you know, a little like, I don't know, protect it like a mouth guard, but like a dick guard for your pee hole.
Do they have just such violent pisses that they need more support?
I think it might be because they're, well, that's a good question. I immediately assumed it had something to do with their skeleton or whatnot being fairly lightweight and like fragile and maybe needing some extra protection, but that would be extra weight. So I don't.
That's where you're going to invest in one spot for extra protection is going to be your dick bone. That makes sense.
Well, I mean, they are pretty essential. They're good for things. They do things. So I was the feminist pain
on your face as you try to tell us dick bones are good for things.
It's another tough episode because while it's super entertaining and funny, there are some aspects of this that can become a little triggering, to be totally frank. So we're just going to talk about this animal kingdom like we always do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to interject my fun aspect and not always my bummer feminist rage. So one of the best things that I learned in graduate school was an acronym to remember all the mammals that have genital bones. And that's PRICK, which is PRICC, stands for primates, rodents, insectivores, carnivora, and chioptera, so bats. And yeah, I mean, who can forget that? PRICK. So not all of those organisms within all of those groups have genital bones, but they are seemingly constrained to those lineages. And it does seem like because of the timing of it, there have been some papers that have been able to see that they've evolved after the split from marsupials and monotremes, but before the most common ancestor of primates and carnivora. So both primates and carnivorans have genital bones. So they think it's somewhere between 145 to about 95 million years ago. The first dick bone did cometh. That's what I've got on. Well, I've got a lot, but I'd love to hear about the Bobellum and all the fun details on that.
Yeah. So the Bobellum, the word Bobellum means jewel or gem in Latin. Which is real, real cute for a bone that is in the clitoris of these animals. So it is the female equivalent of the baculum, and it's much smaller, as we will discuss when we get to walruses. And it is, as you might expect, understudied, probably for a variety of reasons. Surprise. But also including the fact that it is also smaller and it is harder to find. The clit bone is harder to find. So
she said it, not me. She said it.
So to remember which animals have genital bones or have Bobella, you can use the exact same acronym because it's the exact same group of animals. They are cross-correlated, of course. The Bobellum isn't always present in the mammals that have bacula. So sometimes you have bacula in a group. So for rats, for example, male rats have bacula, female rats do not have Bobella. But there is no group that we know of that has a Bobella that does not have a bacula. So they're linked, and you're more likely to lose the lady version than the male version.
Interesting. Interesting. Or again, we just literally, like, I was trying to find evidence of fossil primates with genital bones, and holy shit, you think primates are rare. Well, trying to find their genital bones is way harder.
They need to just fall into giant pools of asphalt more often.
That's and then the all only sudden, example that we have of a primate that is like the equivalent, the European equivalent of Messel. Messel, the site we love, right? That is the only early primate genital bone that's been found is from a male primate that was discovered in like 1975. But I couldn't find a fucking image of it anywhere. Rude. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun day to go back to a lot of stuff I studied in graduate school. I had some triggers this week. Looking up old papers, I was like, oh, God. Before we dive fully into primates, which is, again, because you're probably already going, well, you said primates. Do humans have genital bones? We'll get there. But we do see quite a bit of like diversity in sizes and shapes of these genital bones. It's really, really interesting. They don't seem to vary necessarily with body size, but you know, maybe they do in the case of like the walrus. So a walrus baculum, more on that later, can be about 2 feet long. Some can be even longer. Some can be an almost a full Megan, which is crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Some one went to auction.
I am much bigger than 2 feet tall, just so that we're all fucking aware. Amy is not trying to say that I am 3 feet tall. I am a regular.
Not that there is anything wrong with that.
More than that in height.
This is true. But no, this was an exceptional specimen. It went to auction for $8,000 and it was 4.5 feet long, this genital bone from a walrus. While the smallest that we've seen are a lot of those that are in, you know, rodents. Rats and rodents have got some funky bacula. I think the marmoset, which is a super cute New World monkey from South America. It's got like a 2 millimeter long bacula in those ones. However, you might now be wondering again, you've said primates, Amy. Yeah. So do all primates have genital bones? No, you don't have a genital bone unless something happened to you medically as a child.
Or, you know, if you went real, real freaky into body modification, but that's something different.
Good point, because essentially what the extreme version of erectile dysfunction treatment is an implant, and that is essentially a genital bone that's giving you a bacula so that you can stay hard, because that's all we care about is dudes staying hard. That's literally what this entire fucking episode is about. So I don't know
not mine.
Why I'm like, thank
not
God.
My side.
I just had to like go down bro taverns. Anyway, so how did we get this bacula, this genital bone? As we said, it's a mammalian thing. Mm-hmm. It shows up in true placental mammals. So it's not in things like kangaroos. It's not in things like a platypus. Again, it's not in all of these groups. Now, why do we have a genital bone? Or why do certain groups have a genital bone? This is going to quickly get into the human aspect of why not, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the most common thing folks are going to wonder is why humans do not. But for most part, folks think that they're there to impart rigidity, which is just science speak for keeping that dick hard. And another big part is making intercourse, doing it last even longer. Now, this isn't just for like their pleasure. It's also frequently scientifically thought of as a way to keep a female like occupied while she's like soaking up those swimmers. And so she can't immediately
run. Distracting her.
Yeah, like looking into her eyes while you're still up in there. And so that the female can't go copulate with another male and then you're in more direct sperm competition. So it's like this post-coming adaptation, if you will. So what's really interesting in the scientific literature on this is what would be your guess of what the defining threshold is for long intermission durations versus short? What do you think is the magic number?
What counts as a long sexual interaction in the animal kingdom? You know, I just know that birds do that like real fast cloacal kiss. So I'm going to go with a minute as being the cutoff for long.
It's pretty good.
That does not reflect any human thing, but
that's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm saying is I was like researching this episode. I was like, I have to be really careful. People are going to think I'm married to a man with a barbed penis. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing. No judgment.
Just two paleontologists trying to defend their husband's lack of dick bones.
I've never seen a penis. Let's just go with that. Let's just pretend. Okay. Back to why you would need a dick bone. So in some cases, like cats, there actually needs to be stimulation for the female to even trigger ovulation. And so they're thinking that like more increased time and duration and stimulation, better chance that the female is going to have an egg ready to be fertilized. Now, there's this one, which is called the vagina friction hypothesis, which is somehow even worse than it sounds, which is hard to do. And literally the paper was like, it's like a shoehorn to get into a stubborn vagina. And I was like, oh my God.
What? Yes, it's. Why would a shoehorn be helpful?
To get, this is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is going into that borderline not consensual aspect of this discussion, which is very much that a dick bone can help you get there, even if the female is not wanting you to get there. Yeah. We're going to talk more about the absurd ones having to do with the long. Oh my God, I didn't even answer the question. Oh my God, everyone's been waiting to know how long scientific sex is. So
it's not that long. It's not as long as we've waited. Definitely shorter.
It's 3 minutes. It's actually 3 minutes is what they decided, at least in one paper. So they're saying that in species that fuck for more than 3 minutes, there tends to be more of a presence of a dick bone. Now, here is when I'm going to start throwing all of the curves and like, yeah, but not this group. Yeah, but not that group. So an immediate one that doesn't follow this rule is the bonobos, right? A chimpanzee, the cousin of chimps. They've got a bacula. All other apes except humans have a dick bone, but bonobos fuck for like 15 seconds, like 8 seconds. Like it is just like done out. And so they don't follow the rule of longer doing it equals more dick bones because like they don't follow any rules because they've been gained and lost many times through evolution. So there's probably just like so many different factors that we don't even have. We're so distracted by genitals that we're just like, raw dicks like me. So we do seem to think that smallest bacula seem to be observed in species that have mating systems where females mate with just a single male, whereas bigger or wider or stronger or girthier bacula are usually found in species where females mate with multiple partners. But again, I just told you about chimps and bonobos. They're multi-male, multi-female mating. They're doing it with each other all the fucking time.
They gotta be fast.
Bonobos, it's literally conflict resolution.
Got shit
to do. And so again, like... They're implying that a monogamous mating system or a polygynous where it's like one male who's not competing for with any other males, that those would have smaller dick bones. But that doesn't seem to follow the rules. But what does actually is my first image for you.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
Dick bones. Okay. So go ahead and take a look.
Oh, my God. They look like conodonts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean... The upper right is literally described as a trident shape. Yeah. And the other one, the upper left, is rice rats.
Ugh.
And then the bigger ones at the bottom are bears and a sea lion.
So we've got basically like a spork, curled spork. We've got a trident shape with a real fat face. And we've got a stick. And those are the dick bone shapes that we are looking
at. And I really enjoyed that you said babellum means like jewel or gem because baculum just means stick. So, you know, that's pretty telling. It's pretty fucking telling. Yeah, you can scroll down and we're talking about primate apes. In particular, I love this image so fucking much. I think about it probably daily. I'm not even going to lie. But if we're talking about the genital bones of apes... of primates, you know, we are apes. Ooh. Then you have to talk about the mating system of primates, apes, including us. And so what this image is showing you is showing you the relative testicle size to body size to penis length. Okay. Oh, and boobs.
Okay, so there's they're using those like male and female, like the symbols, and they have decided to not include the fact that those usually have like a cut out center for the circle. So the male one is just a big ball with an arrow pointing out the top, and the female is a big ball with a cross pointing out the bottom, which they've also chosen to represent testicle size as two small balls on the bottom of the male symbol. Breast size on wow. the female version in the middle, which I think they were intending to be yeah. like...
with mm-hmm. nipples.
Yeah, so testicles are just two empty balls. Breasts are empty balls with a little dot in the middle. But it, instead of looking like breasts, it looks like a little stick figure that's shocked. Like, it's yep. so surprised.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wow. happening. What a graphic.
Just... it's amazing, and I love it, and I really think about it often. So what I want you to notice here is that the relative size of the arrow for the male oh, symbol, okay. right? That tells you how long the ding-a-ling okay. is of the specific species. Like how, so this is literally how they're saying what your balls are compared to your body size compared to your shaft length. And there are so many articles out there. You can just Google it and find. They're all like, hey, dudes, you should feel good. You've got the biggest dick out of all the apes. Yep. And it's like, really? Is that how much we're trying to just like pander to the fragile ego of like, really? And it doesn't hold up across primates as a whole either, y'all. Like yeah. there's some baboons who've got some lengthy dang-a-langs. But within apes, we are unique in that we have a long dick, relatively small balls to body size. And why that matters is both can be used to reconstruct the ancestral human mating system. So if you look at gorillas on the far uh-huh. right, we have the gorilla who, what would you say about his testicles to body size to dick size based on this?
He's going more for like a Statue of David look, like small dick, small balls.
Yep, teeny tiny. Yeah, I mean, gentlemen, if your dick is longer than 2.5 inches, congratulations, you have a bigger dick than a gorilla who weighs way more than a human male. And gorillas have teeny tiny nut sacks relative to their body size as well. And again, this has to do with their mating system. So gorillas are what we would call polygynous. They have one male, the silverback gorilla, and he has his group of females, and he has total access to them. They're not sneaking away and slipping it to other gorillas and whatnot. Like, so he is not competing with any other male but him. So he doesn't need to make a ton of sperm all the time. So he's got these teeny little balls. And then we've got bonobos on the other end who have giant mm-hmm. testicles and an average sized dick. And this has been used to say, well, yeah, they have this mini male, mini female mating mm-hmm. system. So the males need to be producing so much spunk because their sperm are competing more than the mm-hmm. individuals are. And so humans kind of fall in between. And honestly, then we just have these like big dicks, which is is interesting. And we're going to get into that. But we don't have a baculum. So is our big dick because we lost the baculum and we're able to get hard, stay hard because of the vascular penis of, we've discussed before. And essentially by pumping that blood through the corpus cavernosum to be able to stay hard. So that's just some food for thought as we continue, because now we're going to talk about why humans don't have a baculum. And this has been debated so fucking much. Now, people who read the Bible will tell you that it is because sometimes the biblical sense of rib that was taken from Adam might actually be his dick bone. Which is like, whew, I'll say a prayer for that. So it's biblical. End of story. End of story. So one article I read was like, well, we don't have baculum because we don't meet that 3-minute benchmark. Human males on average bust a nut at about 2 minutes. Now, there are other studies okay. that are like, no, a lot of humans, the average is more around 5 minutes. But again, it can be way less than that. Again, like from what I've read. I wouldn't know.
Are these self-reported or are right. they timed?
So we know that chimps, bonobos, right? They're very close. They last about 20 seconds. We know that gorilla is lasting about 90 seconds. And the only ape that seems to be doing it for longer than human time is the, so I'm looking at Pongo, which is orangutan. Mm-hmm. So it just like, that's already not following the rules around this like longer intermission yeah. thing. Like that you need to have a long doing it time to have a dick bone when humans don't follow that. And these other ones that do have dick bones are not lasting that long at all. So I kept reading about other hypotheses. I'm just going to go through them. Some of them are fucking batshit crazy. So like this next one, okay. and it's because it's from Richard Dawkins. Oh, he just yeah. published it in a book. And so it tells you it's not peer reviewed, but I guess if your name is Dick and you're a dick, then you get to be an expert on dicks. His take was that we lost the dick bone because females needed to see if a male could get hard or not, because erection failure is a sensitive early warning of health. And that it's like, if you didn't have a dick bone, you could like still be unhealthy. Or if you did have a dick bone, you could still be unhealthy and get it hard. And so that like okay. females were like, and obviously there's shit tons of problems with this besides yeah. the fact that it wasn't peer reviewed and tested. But it, largely that like usually ED seems to vary more with age
yeah.
than with a particular ailment. So it's just like would really just, you know, keep. But then again, like early humans aren't living past like 30. Yeah. So maybe there would be something to that. That's what Richard Dawkins is saying. I didn't say that. Richard Dawkins said that.
Do you mean Richard Dawkins? Dawkins is something else, Amy.
Okay, so some other classic ones is essentially that a boneless penis would be more flexible mm-hmm. and facilitate more range of motion and body movement for the females to get greater stimulation. But as we've learned from okay. the size of the baculum in other apes, they're really tiny and would be in like the distal uh-huh. part of the tip, and it would be like literally, they say 15 millimeters long. So it probably wouldn't have limited any of that. So most folks don't seem to like that one. Other folks have thought that the evolution of bipedalism and sperm competition resulted in the need for a longer penis, that like maybe they would need a bigger okay. supporting baculum. And which then ties into, so if that's favoring selection against a baculum but for a large penis,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
so is that because the large baculum was a discomfort to males and vulnerable to injuries, which is what this most recent paper
that makes sense
was like, yeah, it's because a human male has this longer dick, right? We've already established that. They've also stood up, so you can see it. It is like right there.
Yeah.
So if it had a baculum, and they're also, his paper goes into gaining awareness of like, you realize that, oh, they have a baculum. If I nut tap that male, I could break Ooh. His baculum and outcompete him. And so essentially it is like this idea that to avoid male dick breaking, we lost the baculum. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should go back into direwolves now and talk about.
Oh, yes.
So out of 400 bacula that are in La Brea, only one of them was super, super obviously busted. So pathologically was definitely busted. Only 8 were pathological, but that doesn't mean that all of them were broken. But this one that was broken is broken to the side. And this might be a good point to bring up the fact that direwolf bacula are way, they have more volume than a wolf bacula does. So these animals are not that different in size, And their length isn't that much different as far as the bacula. But the girth of the bacula is far, far bigger in direwolves. And basically, they just have a very robust dick bone. Nice. And so the idea is that it's to avoid scenarios very much like this one, where the thought is that perhaps the male wasn't just like nut tapped by another direwolf, but was in the process of mating with a female and then sideswiped by a competitor. Oh.
Rude.
And the fact that this bacula is broken doesn't actually mean that that was a bad characteristic, because of course, you know, 8 pathological bacula out of 400 is a pretty low percentage overall of broken dick bones.
Right.
Yeah. So I can only imagine that if the direwolves were capable of like complicated reasoning and were like, if I slam him off right now, that boy's going to break his dick bone, that probably they may have gone more of a less dick bone kind of way. But
right.
There are correlations within most canines with kind of that robusticity and the volume and the size also being related to, of course, group size. So big old dicks that are usually pretty simple and not very complex in shape in canids are related to bigger pack sizes.
Interesting. Okay.
Whereas with monogamous canines or canids that have a smaller like pack size and less competition in theory, they still have bacula for the most part, but they have bacula that are more complex in shape.
Ah.
So instead of just going for thick and strong,
ornamented.
Yeah, they have more, you know, intriguingly complex shaped bacula, which is.
I have pictures to show you later.
Yeah. Yeah, so bacula that are really thick seem to be maybe correlated with group size, which is interesting because it does tell us that, you know, I mean, even if we didn't have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of direwolves kind of fossilized together, that might potentially be a good indication that they had packs of some kind. You can look at the dick bone to see the pack size.
Okay. No, that's really interesting because of not only do primatologists look at the dick bone and its intricate nature, they also just straight up look at the dicks.
Yeah.
And have also claimed that you can kind of infer mating system, again, from dick decor, if you will. And that, again, trying
so
to
decor?
Interpret humans.
Just Dickcore.
Dickcore. Oh, name of the episode. Okay, so right, this like I love this talk about behavior from bones,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like that's what we're talking about, really, and that's what we're trying to understand about humans or the lack of this bone, because people really fucking care about the ancestral mating condition of human beings because there's a lot of judgment and bias
and we're just
religious
self-absorbed.
Overlays that
we're self-absorbed
really...
as a species. We are
yes.
so intrigued
well,
by
you.
Ourselves.
We are. Yeah. And we're well. Come on, a narcissist is us.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, no, we had no hope. We care a lot about our genitals in general. So some folks really want to argue that human beings are naturally monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
They really like this idea that there wasn't as much competition, so your balls aren't as long. But then when we look at the sexual dimorphism between males and females, that would indicate that there probably isn't monogamy going on. And the fact of the matter of like modern day human societies do a whole bunch of different things from monogamy to serial monogamy for polygyny, which is considered one male, multi-females, mm-hmm. or polyandry, which is one female, multi-males. Like human beings do it all. It's hard, again, to be like, we're observing humans in the wild,
yeah.
and the college student is fucking the one. You know, it's like, it's just really, really hard to do.
That was
by David Attenborough at the dorms.
I was going to say, that was a disturbing David Attenborough.
So one of the things that comes up is that the human penis is, in fact, extremely dull. It does not have lumps, ridges, flanges, kinks, or any other exciting type of feature that other primates have. In primates, this lack of penis complexity is usually found in monogamous species. So now let's go look at some monkey dicks.
Okay.
And to your first example of penile morphology in primate species that have a non-gregarious, aka dispersed mating system.
Wow.
So we have things like a a Galago. We have things like some other, we've got Nycticebus cocaine. That's a slow loris.
You know what these look like?
Tell me.
They look like anal chimneys.
Just real complex.
Some of them look kind of scaly.
It's like Willy Wonka went X-rated. I don't know. It's especially G with like just the little ball at the end. Like, hi, hi.
Yeah. So
these are all.
I don't know. I like F with the butterfly wings. It's very.
It looks like an armadillo somehow. I don't know how, but it does. So yeah. These are what they're referring to as like more ornate penises. And these are a dispersed species. So like primates that live pretty solitary and just come together to mate. So take what you will from that. H, the lower left, is the only ape included. So this is the orang. This is Pongo. You know, so this is dispersed. This is the bells and whistles you get on your dispersed stick. Now you can scroll on down to the next set of observations on the genitalia of primates. So these are what we would call multi-male, multi-female mating systems. Okay. So again, they even use my least favorite word, promiscuous. Yep. And again, I guess like their point is that they're supposed to be more like less boring. And I guess some of these might be a little less boring, but some just look pretty fucking boring to me. They just look like weird animal dicks.
Okay.
And then our final image is those of primate species that are within a monogamous pair forming, or again, that polygynous. So that like one male, multi-female. So these are the ones that aren't competing, that are in, you know, like they're like H there again is, I'm pretty sure, our gorilla. So you can see it's not very big. And now what's also interesting about this is they have quite defined heads of the dicks here too, which other authors have pointed out that that in itself seems to be an adaptation for sperm removal from a female. So I'm just kind of confused if these are truly, you know, monogamous. And again, like, how are we even testing this with, I'm sure in this time we've actually with genetics realized that some of these are not even monogamous in true practice. So really, I mean, it's just, I think it's really like whatever you want to make of it with why humans don't. I think there's a variety of factors playing in with the fact that we became bipedal. So I read this really funny, oh my God, where is it? I was laughing so hard. It is from a publication from The Mankind Quarterly. And it is all about how when we became bipedal, right, we stood up on two legs, that it changed the reproductive passage of females and it became longer, essentially. And it says, this may have posed a potential problem for the small penis rear mounting males. I just don't have the maturity to handle that. So essentially saying that dicks had to get long to do it doggy style because front facing was like too complicated or something like that. And so that selection must have favored a longer dick so that they could like accommodate the change of space and new biological constraints of being bipedal. And oh God, there was like another point too. Oh, something about how like when as males stand up, they no longer have as much protection to hide in like, and as many cavities maybe even in the body to like tuck their junk because it was all used because we again stood up. And so that may have selected for against the bacula so shrinkage could happen and that you could just shrink it all up. But again, if we're talking about a bacula that's only 15 millimeters long, I think you could still shrink to 15 millimeters long. So the jury is fucking out. There isn't a consensus. And there is a research project that we wrote about for the blog ages ago. And I'm going to end on this note, is this idea that sperm competition in males, they literally wrote this paper. It is this horrifying paper all about the human penis as a semen displacement device. And they literally just took a bunch of sex toys, including a false vagina, and had the male authors decide the consistency of like a cornstarch Marchone Waters semen. And then they like tried to measure how much semen was displaced from this sex toy. And they made a point that when they interviewed college students, that the men would say that after they'd been away from their girlfriends for a longer amount of time or suspected that she had been unfaithful, they would drill her extra hard and long evolutionarily to remove that spunk. So that's what a fucking scientific paper literally interviewed college kids. Yeah. I'm just horrified and impressed. So please tell me about something besides dicks, because I've been looking at weird dicks all day.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those like evolutionary psychology papers are just absolutely batshit. And I wonder if humans still had a bacula, if maybe we would be a little bit more mentally stable in the field of evolutionary psychology, because at least then we'd have a fossil record of dick bones. But would you like to know how do you turn a baculum off and on? Not sexually.
Like I don't already?
Again, somehow implying your partner.
I don't. This is so weird. This is a weird episode.
Okay.
Please tell me. Okay. Please.
So, evolutionary psychology is a pretty weird field. But I've got to say that what they were doing in the 70s to animals, way fucking weirder, just off the rails bullshit. So, of course, we're going to talk about the Bob Bellum again, because it's great. And there is a paper that I read where they wanted to see if they could make female mice and rats have a longer Bobella that was more like basically a bacula. And then there's some other papers that wanted to see if they could do the opposite and reduce a male baculum to the size of a Bobellum. And in this particular paper, they took rats because rats don't have Bobellum. They have a bacula, but they don't have a Bobellum. A baculum, don't have a Bobellum. My singular versus multiple is getting confused again. But mice have both a baculum and a Bobellum. So they took the two and they gave them, what do you think that you could give an animal to make its dick bone grow bigger? Or its clit bone.
I'd give it some testosterone.
Correct. Yep. So androgens are what they were giving these mice and rats. And they found that if you give them androgens, both of them will get a longer Bobellum. Even though female rats don't have a Bobellum, you can make it reappear through early and judicious application of androgens. And it looks like depending on the time when you administer those androgens, that will obviously both affect the length because it affects how big it can get. But it turns out that the baculum in mice and rats is two pieces. It's a bony piece that's proximal to the body, so close to the body. And then it's a cartilage piece that turns into bone. So it ossifies. That's like the end. And then the two pieces fuse. So they have a two-part baculum. And if you give a female rat androgens later on in life, she will develop the distal part. She'll get the cartilage part that turns to bone, but she won't develop the proximal part. So they kind of also appear at different phases of life. And of course, if you castrate a male rat, it gets more of a Bobellum and less of a baculum. So all of these things often have to do with testosterone, which is why, while you were looking up weird dicks, I spent a lot of time looking at dog vaginas. So let's talk about dog vaginas. So there's quite a few. Yeah, what a wonderful thing to cheer. So there's a lot of cases, veterinary cases dealing with basically the development of a Bobellum in female dogs. So female dogs typically do not naturally have a Bobellum. It's usually not present, but it is present in some, and in some it can get so big that it can stick outside of like the vulva lips, so it gets pretty prominent. But they did describe like the reason that it gets removed is, you know, I imagine that that's probably going to dry it out. But they did describe it as chronic irritation and lots of licking.
Oh.
And I was like, well, are you sure that they're irritated or they just have a hypertrophic clitoris?
Right. They're enjoying it.
Can't ask the dog. Yeah. this can be caused, like, so we haven't talked really on this podcast yet about the fact that intersex people exist. But in dogs, there's quite a few examples of a Bobellum forming basically in cases where you have like an intersex dog. And it can also form if you give the dog androgens, which leads me to a weird side segue. Did you know that greyhounds be juicing? that greyhounds are getting testosterone shots?
Oh, I'm like not surprised considering we've been doing weird things to dogs since the dawn of time. So
if
I was going to guess, I'm sure like the dog fighting ring is giving their dogs testosterone too.
Yeah, there's lots of greyhounds that I guess get androgen that helps them build muscle mass, and it removes or stops their estrous cycle, which is like, it's not monthly bleeding, but it's their biological cycle, which makes them run faster. But sometimes it also gives them clitoral hypertrophy, where they have an extremely large Bobellum that can cause pain and problems. And then has to be surgically removed.
Oh.
And sometimes they just remove the whole clitoris, which I thought was kind of weird. And then I remembered that they're also spaying that dog. So, like, I guess I don't really know too much about the sex lives of dogs. But,
well,
so, yeah, dog vaginas. Yeah.
Okay, question. Yeah. All of my stuff, right, because we're obsessed mm-hmm. with humans and we're really obsessed with human dicks. It's all mm-hmm. like function. What is it for? What was it for?
Yeah.
What do we know? So like what with Bobellum, like what is this driving, you know, with all this, it's like physical from getting the D in the V. So why, why the equivalent? Is it just because it's not really sex linked and both are going to develop that just because, or are there actual like functional adaptive parts to this?
So I'm sure this will shock you, but that is understudied. And
what?
As far as we know, it is non-functional in most animals, possibly all animals. So it doesn't seem to have a real purpose. And there's some studies that have shown that the Bobellum is more variable than the baculum. So like you could have weird, different changing Bobellum sizes in an animal that has a pretty stable baculum size. And they suggest that this might be related to a relaxing of evolutionary pressure on the size of the Bobellum, that as long as it's not big enough to make your clitoris stick out of your vulva and get, you know, dry, that it doesn't really matter what the size or the shape of it is. That doesn't mean that there is no reason for a Bobellum. We don't have like papers that have described a potential reason at this point, but of course, like many pieces of female anatomy, that may just be the result of being understudied. But they do seem to be something you can get rid of without androgens and increase or develop with androgens. So there are definitely hormonal links. So it's possible that a lot of these animals that do have bacula, they probably also have a Bobella at some stage in their development. It just might not actually ossify.
Okay.
Or it might not stick around, or it might be so small that you can't find it, because some of these animals are really, really small. And I was going to save this for the last point, but I think I'm going to just say it right now. As I was going through and reading, looking for papers desperately on the Bobellum, I just kept coming up with chipmunk papers.
Oh.
Kept being like, I'm looking for a fossil baculum, fossil Bobellum. Why do I keep seeing chipmunks? So chipmunks, the number one way to identify them, two species, the most reliable way to identify a chipmunk to species is the baculum or the Bobellum.
Wow.
The genital bones.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that. I forgot to mention in my little intro, because I get so distracted by primates, that in other groups like mustelids and other carnivorans, so things like badgers and raccoons, that you can actually get a relative age on an individual based on their baculum and because of, yeah, like if the tip has ossified or not. So maybe they also have like this two-part kind of system. So yeah, they have other uses besides us being obsessed with ourselves.
ourselves, yeah. And chipmunks, I guess, they just kind of all evolutionarily converge on the same like coat color, same size, but not the same dick bones. So, or clit bones, different genital bones.
Like, we're unique. You just don't know where. Shh.
Chipmunks.
Credit where credit. Well, on the other end of that spectrum in terms of size, we already mentioned the walrus. Usyk is also known as the Usyk, which is a term from indigenous peoples of Alaska. And it refers to not only the walrus, but pretty much like a lot of pinnipeds. So things like seals, sea lions, and even polar bears, they'll refer to it. They know it to be this genital bone. Mm-hmm. And again, it can be like around 2 feet long. Again, there's some really big exceptions to that. So historically, they were not necessarily really sought after for carving, but in the 20th century, as white people were like, hey, we want your indigenous art, they were like, we'll carve this dick bone for you. I found this one article that was like, they were like, we don't really care about this weird bone, but if you want to pay us for it, yeah, like, you know, and I'm like, I would take that weird bone. So some fun Usyk, you know, so this is kind of this paleo heritage that we're getting at here, too, where it's like how fossils and how modern life impact our culture as people as well. So there's a famous congressman from Alaska, Don Young. He was in office for like 65 years or something, a controversial human. And at one point, I guess it was reported by The Washington Post that he was arguing with the Fish and Wildlife Service director, and he brandished an 18-inch long walrus penis bone and pounded it into his fist for emphasis. So making appearance in politics. And how I learned about the Usyk was when I lived in Alaska and I went to Midnight Sun Brewing Company, which sells and brews a beer called the Usyk Amber. And they literally have a tap handle that is an Usyk. So they are grabbing that walrus dick bone every time they pour you a beer, and they sell shirts. And you can buy, I saw on their website, you can buy one of those tap handles of an Usyk. And I messaged them and I said, is this real bone? And they have not responded. Let me know.
Yeah, if I'm gonna get a beer tap that's a baculum, I want it to be real bone. No bone clones for the baculum handle.
I think considering it's $70, it's probably a replica.
Well, would you like to hear about walrus Barbella?
Fuck yeah.
All right.
Fuck yeah.
So the walrus can get up to, what did you say, 4.5 feet long for the baculum?
Yeah, the longest.
Yeah. So how big do you think that the Barbellum is in a walrus?
I'm going to go with like a foot long. I'm going to go with a foot long clit bone.
It's 3 centimeters.
Oh, yeah.
So really, really reduced. So go ahead and scroll down to the next image on that sheet. But what's interesting is that this size discrepancy is present in a lot of animals. So a lot of animals have a much smaller Barbellum than they do a baculum, but not all animals. So the squirrel Barbellum and baculum are actually very similar in size and shape. So
interesting.
That to me suggests there really should be more research into the Barbellum, because if you have very similar things between male and female, I'm curious as to the function of the Barbellum. But in walruses, I don't think it has much of a function. I think it's pretty much vestigial in a sense.
Vestigial. Yeah, we got there. Oh yeah, no, these all look so weird.
Yeah.
They all are just such weird looking bones. Yeah. And yeah, like, especially if we're seeing similar sizes, similar morphologies, similar, like, that one's got, like, the squirrel's got, you know, like, ornamentation and shit. You would think that there's some pressure there.
Yeah.
Some sort of selective pressure. Yeah. Well, fuck. I'm dicked out. And I mean that in terms of this podcast. I'm also, like, there's, like, no way to talk about it without sounding really weird. I can't even say I'm finished. Thank you for listening. If you liked the podcast, be sure to rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. We really appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more and support the show, follow us on Patreon for some exclusive bits or on our various social media platforms. You can follow Amy on Instagram at Mary Annings Revenge.
And Megan on Instagram and TikTok at Geopedal Fabric, or both of us at Weird and Dead on Instagram and TikTok. This podcast is part of the Geology Podcasting Network.
Produced by the traveling geologist, Chris Spencer.
Cover art provided by Chris Spencer and the hosts.
Our theme song is Unlock Me by Praz Kunal. Editing services provided by the amazing Katie Bradley.
Hosted by and researched by us, Amy Atwater and Megan Weatherall. Thanks for listening.
And correspondingly, in their clitorises, clitorisi, clitoris.
Maybe just say clits?
No.